Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere MQ for COS Performance. Today's presenters are Beverly Brown and Lynn Elkins. Beverly has been with WebSphere MQ Level 2 support since 1997, after 10 years with KIC support. She supports WebSphere MQ primarily on the COS platform. Lynn has been with ATS for almost 12 years, supporting the WebSphere MQ family of products on C hardware. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Beverly and Lynn.
Okay. Thank you, Joseph. As Joseph said, this is Beverly Brown, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We'll start out on slide 2 with the agenda that Lynn and I will be covering. And just to let you know, throughout the presentation, Lynn and I will be periodically passing back and forth to one another. So what we'll start out with in discussing performance problems is some questions for you to ask yourself about when did the problem start. This will give you some clues to help discover the solution, hopefully. We'll talk about some common problems that Level 2 and Lynn's team and even the Hursley Performance Test Group have seen. And that would include things like system resource problems or configuration, application problems, slow channels, APARs with some maintenance that can resolve some problems. We'll also talk about some resources that are available to help you in diagnosing problems, such as tools. We'll talk about defect support versus services, wanting you to be sure that you get to the proper resource to help you resolve your problem, the people with the right tools and skills to address your particular situation. We'll talk about some references, such as some support packs and things like that that'll be helpful, and you'll be interested in an upcoming workshop. So as we go through, you'll notice we may skip a few slides that contain a little bit more detailed notes, but we will talk about those, and they will be available in the PDF, so that information will be there for you to see. And also, when you look at the PDF, you may see some blue highlighted areas, and those will be hot links to some good information such as support packs or tech notes or APARs. So if you click on those, that'll take you directly to some references. Oh, and also the information center. There will be some useful links to things like that. So if we go on to slide 3 now, you'll want to think about when did the problem start? Is there a new configuration or application? For instance, did you implement a clustering or queue sharing, start using MQ clients, or just add a new application to the mix? Or did the problem begin after you made some changes to applications or the configuration or apply some maintenance? Is the problem associated with a certain time of day or perhaps higher workload? Does it tend to happen always at market open or the last day of the month or something like that, when you might have certain workload going that's just driving you beyond your capacity? And some problems, it'll be a little tough to look at whether this seems more like a capacity tuning issue or a product defect. Sometimes capacity can expose defects, but other times just trying to do too many things with the given resources that you have. So sometimes it's a tough call, but it's certainly something that you would want to ask yourself about the type of problem you're having. It also helps to know what does normal look like in your environment. If you know what that looks like, then it helps narrow down the problem when you start having problems. And you can know whether something is the way things normally happen on your system or if it's a red flag. So now if we skip on to slide 5, please. So getting into some of the common problems that we've seen through the support center, the system resource shortages. That might involve CPU or storage or I.O. For instance, with CPU, it might be a dispatching priority issue, and you would need to check your workload manager settings. And here is one of those blue links that I was talking about, planning your storage and performance requirements. That's a link to the a section in the Information Center that will give you some general guidelines on how MQ, Kix, DB2, those sort of things should be set relative to one another. And some of the problems we've seen with dispatchability might involve maybe the chin not being dispatched, and that would cause slowdowns in the channel or, in extreme cases, even channel timeouts. Or we've seen a case where a low-priority job on a heavily loaded system might get an internal MQ latch and then get suspended, and so then no one can use that latch until the holder wakes up and then releases that latch. So sometimes a low-priority job can actually hold up other higher-priority work, so you just have to check on whether you do have some CPU constraint there. Then there's virtual storage. Sometimes it might be just the configuration as to how much has been made available relative to how much work there is to do. Or there can even be storage leaks sometimes. MQ does use some common storage, but it also uses some private storage that it breaks up into subpools and manages. So there is a tech note number 123.32.45 that is a good discussion about MQ private storage use, and it describes how there are periodic messages. Normally it's once an hour. There's a CSQY220I message that would show you how much private storage is available and how much is being used. Now, if that starts running low, you'll start getting some other messages more frequently, and that tech note goes through that. And it also describes something called storage contraction. In order to avoid the overhead of a lot of free mains and get mains, MQ will hold on to some storage in its subpools. So what might initially look to you like a leak is really just usage growing, but if it reaches a certain point, then MQ will try to contract that and release storage. So you just have to keep an eye on things, and again, knowing what's normal and watch things over time to see if it really does seem to be a leak that's unchecked. And I will say that leaks a lot of times could be due to a product defect. So those are one of the problems that you would probably need to come to the support center on. And just, again, remembering the difference between higher usage that could be due to configuration or application buffer sizes, in either your batch applications or client applications, or just the pending private storage contraction. So now for the next slide, I'll pass over to Lynn.
Thank you. Joseph, would you please turn to foil number 7? Continuing with our common resource or system resource shortages, one area that we've seen quite often is I/O problems. And these can be difficult to find because in some cases, you know, you're seeing overall good response time on I/O, but what happens under the covers is we get one I/O, especially on the WMQ logs, that takes longer than is typical, and that, of course, is rolled up into an average I/O response time. So if we get one particular I/O that is holding resources and holding locks in MQ, and that doesn't resolve for a little while, then we get a stacking on effect of work waiting for that particular I/O to complete. That's been something we have seen a number of times. But one of the things that we recommend, of course, is that the logs and our page sets that we are heavily used are not on the same volume, and that to keep an eye on the placement. We've actually traced an I/O, a lengthy I/O problem, through MQ, CICS, and IMS before we finally figured out exactly what the pattern was and when this occurred, and this one particular I/O was impacting all these subsystems in sequence. So please keep an eye on that and be aware that that can be an issue. And I'm going to be turning it back to Beverly. Joseph, if you would please turn to foil number 9 now.
Okay. Thank you. Another problem we've seen a couple of reports of recently were some delays due to program loading. Somebody had some statistics where they saw that that's what was going on. So one of the things that you can do to help with that is use Library Look-Aside, and there's a really good discussion on that in Support Pack MP, as in Mary Peter 16, if you'll see that for further details. And that's a support pack that's put out by the performance group in Hursley. So it's really a good one. It's got some benchmarking and a lot of other good information where some loads were run and give you some numbers and good tuning suggestions. And then also I just wanted to make quick mention of a couple of GRS commands that you can use. Sometimes if there's global resource contention, it's more of a deadlock, and that would be more of an extended hang. But it could certainly also be involved in some slowdowns if those resources are slow and being released. So just wanted to mention those display GRS commands that you would see the syntax for in the PDF. And then on to slide 10 for Lynn.
We're going to start now with some of the configuration problems or issues that we see that can really impact your performance with MQ on ZOS. And probably the lowest hanging fruit we've got is buffer pool shortages. And if you are using private queues on ZOS, your queue placement can be very important, and the way it uses the buffer pools under the covers can be extremely important. Now, we would like for everyone to see the defining your buffer pools topic in the information center and also the tech note. But be on the lookout in your JES log for the message CSQP020E, which indicates that the buffer pool is too small in the master job log. Now, this is flagged as an error message, and there may be times when you actually expect to get this particular message, especially when you're running a large batch job where you have batch processes that may load up a queue and then drain it off later. You may periodically see these buffer pool too small messages and know that for this given period of time, it's okay. This goes back to what Beverly said earlier about what is normal for your environment. However, if you start seeing this particular message a great deal, if you start seeing it in buffer pools where you know that there's only online work allocated into those buffer pools, you probably need to look at that because you probably need to take a closer look at your environment and the positioning of your paid set and buffer pools. The other thing that you need to do periodically is review your buffer pool statistics from the SMF-115 data perspective. Those can tell you a lot about how you're utilizing your buffer pools, how big they are currently, how many times you're hitting a low point, which would start off with your dispatching what we call the asynchronous write task, which is where the messages are taken from the buffer pool and put to a page set that's associated with that queue. And it also tells you when messages are pulled back from that page set and restored into the buffer pool so that an application can get those messages. So you have the opportunity to look at a lot of different areas, and you can determine when your buffer pool utilization is going up. So it gives you an opportunity to do some limited trend analysis. Joseph, if you'll move on to foil number 12, the other configuration problem that we have seen quite a bit that you can help your performance on is in your page sets, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier, but the big point here is to have a strategy for your queue placement. We're recommending, of course, that you don't place any application queues on page set ID 0, and we're also recommending that you don't put application queues on page set ID 1. Now, that's something that is buried deep within the CSP2 input modules. There's a little note in there about not using page set ID 1 for application use because MQ is making heavy use of that. We've seen this cause some performance problems in some customer accounts, so you might want to take a look at your utilization there. Another recommendation is to place short-lived messages and long-lived messages on different page sets and in different buffer pools. One of the reasons for that is that the short-lived messages, you know, you're going to hope that they never actually get written to the buffer pool. And the long-lived ones, you might want to make that, put those into a smaller buffer pool and onto individual page sets based on the queues so that you can roll them out in parallel and the messages, you know that they're going to get written out and read back in later. One particular recommendation that my group consistently makes is to place the system cluster transmit queue on a separate page set. We've seen a lot of performance issues caused by an outage, something that has nothing at all to do with MQ, but because one particular element or subnet in your cluster happens to go out at any given time, your system cluster transmit queue seems to build up very heavily and can build up very quickly, and you don't want that to impact your other processing. So if you'll turn to foil number 13, Joseph, another consideration on page sets is think about the system, the other system queues that may grow large in the event of an emergency, such as the dead letter queue or event queues. I can't tell you the number of times we've seen issues created because people turn on a certain event and forget that they need something that will drain the queue to go along with that event, and that has had repercussions within the queue manager itself. So please make sure that you remember that and remember that those queues can occasionally grow large during periods of, you know, let's say I have a situation where an application is down and my dead letter queue starts to fill up because none of the messages can be put to the destination queue because it's already full. So keep those in mind. Now, another thing to be aware of, and this is documented very nicely in Support Pack MP1G, and there's a link on this foil to that, is that in 701 and now in 7.1, each message, each short message, can be on a separate page. So you may start seeing more buffer pool and page set utilization when you move to 7.01. And that's just because in earlier versions of MQ, messages, short messages, you could have more than one of them on any given page. In 7.01, messages were allocated one per page. So if I had a message that was short, it would get its own page. That has improved efficiency in other types of processing significantly, and we've seen some really good payback in a number of situations. But it can cause more utilization of buffer pools and page sets. So keep that in mind, and again, that's where it's documented very nicely. I'm going to turn it back over to Beverly on foil number 14. Joseph, thank you.
Okay, another one of our favorite common problems that we see that actually sometimes comes to level 2 but is not a defect, and that has to do with queue indexing. Now, this is something that is unique to the ZOS platform. If you have applications that are matching by message ID or coral ID or group ID, you need to set the index type for the queue accordingly. If it isn't set correctly, then your performance will progressively get worse as the depth of the queue increases. And this is because MQ will need to go and search the queue sequentially to find that message. So, say, especially if you have, say, 1,000 messages, it's going to go looking through all those. And then it gets even worse if you have more messages than will fit in your buffer pool, and I.O. has to start occurring to the page sets, so it takes it even longer to go through and scan that whole list. Whereas if there is an in-storage index, then it can find that message quickly and go directly to it and not have to scan through all of them. Lynn has actually said that she has seen performance improvements with indexing with a queue depth as low as 5 messages. I mean, that seems surprising that low would make a difference, but she has seen that occur. Now, queue indexing can be seen in the SMS 116 accounting data, in the Class 3 data. That's one of the things that, one of the tools that we'll talk about later on. And Class 3 is not on by default, but if you collect that, you can see if there are queues that are being gotten from by one of those message ID or coral ID and whether queue indexing is occurring. And also, indexing could be relevant for message-driven beans, where it would help to have the queue set with an index type of message ID. There is a new tech note that's not quite published yet, but I'll give you the number here. The tech note number will be 151-1276. Again, that's 151-1276. And it will go into more detail about when this would be relevant. It's more in the version 6 scenario. Once you get to the version 7 level, some of the design change, so it's not an issue. But if you are still running version 6 JMS or WAS or that sort of thing, queue managers, that indexing for an MDBQ would be relevant for you. Okay, and then on to slide 16, passing back to Lynn.
Okay, with some additional configuration issues that we've seen that have impacted performance, now I'm going to talk a little bit about the active and archive logs. And this first statement is one that I kind of giggle at every once in a while. It says, we ideally make active logs large enough so that it takes at least 30 minutes to fill a single log. In many situations, we are seeing logs fill up much more quickly than that. In today's environment, you may have a very busy queue manager or a peak period, and we would like to see log switches take place no more than every 1 or 2 minutes, but, you know, it's ideally 30 minutes, but the truth of the matter is that we see a lot of log switching in highly active environments taking place on about every minute or every 2 minutes. Once it starts getting below that, that's when we really start thinking that maybe we've got, you know, we're trying to stuff too much work into one queue manager. And the reason for that is just sometimes I.O. can't keep up. And that's also sometimes when we're seeing problems with internal latching. You know, we're trying to write stuff out to a log. We're trying to go through a log switch process. And a log switch process internally includes a checkpoint. So there's other work going on, and that can mean longer held latches and things like that, which can impact the performance of the overall queue manager. So it is important that you keep an eye on the number of times your logs do switch. And unfortunately, we don't provide at this point a count of the number of times your log has switched in any of the SMF data. You really have to look at your JES logs to determine that. You need to think about your mount time or recovery time from your archives on tape or on DASDI. Now, this is for a recovery type scenario. And one of the things that happened with version 6 of MQ was the concept of log shunting was introduced. And this has made, you know, I've had some people say, well, this means we don't have to worry about this anymore. And it doesn't mean you don't have to worry about this anymore, but it's not as critical as it used to be. And log shunting is very simply moving the log records forward into a active log should that need to happen so that it can be more readily accessible for perhaps a longer running unit of work. But you do see messages when you have log shunting going on, and it gives you an opportunity to go out and investigate and see what was going on, why you might have shunted, why you might have a long running unit of work. You need to make sure that you do resolve any archiving problems so that the active logs don't all become full. If they all become full, you have a very long-running unit of work. If for some reason you can't archive, then your queue manager basically will stop. And while, you know, that may not be a performance problem, it's really more critical error than that. We have had those reported as performance problems. Another warning that I'm going to give here, this is not a performance problem, but it is something that we are making sure that customers are aware of. You need to make sure that you are responding appropriately to the messages that indicate that your RBA is getting very high. MQ, as delivered, will accept an RBA on the log files of up to 12 foxes. The documentation says it will accept things up to 8 followed by 12 zeros. That's not true. It will accept the log RBA going up to 12 foxes. But we have seen a couple of incidents where these messages were ignored or were not seen frequently enough, and people actually had their logs wrapped, and it's not something that you want to go through. There's a flash on this, so please be aware, and I believe that there's a couple of PTFs coming out, if they haven't already come out, to make this a little bit more clear in some environments. So if you'll turn to foil number 18, another configuration issue that has caused some performance problems from time to time is the security interval in timeout. And underneath the covers, MQ keeps a cache of security information. But to make sure that that information is not abused, to be in keeping with best practices from a security perspective, there are two parameters that are defined on your queue manager, and one is the interval and one is the timeout. And the interval is the time between checks to determine whether or not the timeout has been reached on any particular security information. And so if you have a user ID with certain resources and it's been out there for the default is 54 minutes, then the next time the security interval is hit and that particular and the security cache is checked, then that is expired. So the information rolls out of the security cache so that any kind of checking that was done for this particular user ID will be redone the next time they try to access these particular resources. Now, if you have a high-volume queue manager, if you have a lot of operators, and you have a lot of activity, and the activity tends to be they sign on in the morning and they stay active all day long, then you might want to look at adjusting both your interval for checking and your timeout. If your security model is relatively static, we actually have had some customers set it so that the security interval only took place, you know, once a day or something like that. And that was just to remove that chain that you go through looking at the security cache and determining which items should time out and which ones, you know, could remain. So again, if you notice that you have these slowdowns and they are spiky slowdowns, you notice this pattern. In fact, that one of the customers that originally reported a problem like this, they actually noticed that it was happening at exactly 12-minute intervals when it occurred. And this was one of the things behind it. So the control blocks that are used are in key 7 storage. Now, as of 7.01 and, of course, beyond, this particular security area is held above the bar. So if you'll turn to foil number 20, Beverly's going to pick up from here. Thank you.
Okay. Next, I just wanted to make mention of a queue manager attribute called log load, and this controls checkpoints, how many operations are recorded in the logs before a checkpoint is taken. Now, also checkpoints are taken when a log switches, but this would control in between the switches. And I will point out that SMS data will record if there are checkpoints for log load, but not for the log switch checkpoints. And I'll just point out that the default of 500,000 works pretty well for most people. And a warning is if you make it too small and it increases the number of checkpoints, you can get bogged down with that processing. Or if you make it too large, it will tie up some other resources, such as private storage. So just be careful if you start trying to tune that parameter. And then a couple of other parameters associated with the channel initiator are the number of adapters and dispatchers. And again, I'll go back to Support Pack MP16. It has a really good write-up on advice on how to set those. And sometimes we've seen that cause some problems with channel delays. Okay, and on to slide 22 and back to Lynn.
Okay, now we're going to talk about one of my favorite areas of opportunity, and that's with the applications. And before I get into any specifics, one of the things that we commonly recommend is that if you do not normally turn on your SMF 116 Class 3 accounting records, and they are prolific, we all know that, we recommend that people turn them on for every ZOS Queue Manager maybe once a month, once every couple of weeks for an SMS interval. And the reason that we recommend that is it makes it much easier to see some of these application issues that we're going to talk about here. Plus, it also lets you see what happens when the application is behaving normally, so that when a problem does occur, it gives you something to go back to and say, well, you know, it wasn't happening here. Let's see if the pattern of utilization has changed. And a lot of this, you know, a lot of performance, a lot of problem determination is really looking and finding the right patterns and seeing how things fit together from that standpoint. So one of the first things that we talk about here is reducing the overhead caused by unnecessary connect and disconnects and open and closes. Now, typically we see these type of application problems when we have what we call a poorly behaved client application. And that is one that is connecting, doing an MQ open, doing an MQ put, closing, disconnecting, then reconnecting, doing an MQ open, doing an MQ get for the reply, doing an MQ close, and then doing an MQ disconnect. Those patterns are easy to spot in the SMF 116 Class 3 data, but essentially there's a lot of overhead involved with the connect and disconnect and open and close, and that by reducing those, you know, by using tools like connection pooling, by those types of methods, you can find that you can save considerably in both response time performance and in CPU utilization. Avoid putting MQ put one commands in a loop. And we have a classic example of this at a customer that my team has visited several times. We found that in one CICS transaction, they were actually issuing over 7,000 MQ put ones to the same queue in the same unit of work. This, and what had happened here is they had taken code, this is what I call the downside of application reuse. They had taken some code that had been written in another application and essentially copied that without necessarily understanding what it was that these different instructions were doing. So with a relatively simple change to the application, and that was to put the MQ open outside of the loop, then use an MQ put, and then a MQ close at the end of the loop, you know, once they had done all 7,000 of these, they improved their response time. They saw a dramatic decrease in missing their SLAs and increased their performance and reduced their CPU utilization. Avoid using temporary dynamic queues. This is true on ZOS specifically. On the distributed platforms, it behaves a little differently. They create what they call ghost or shadow temporary dynamic queues that remain around for a little while. That is not true on ZOS. Again, your SMF 116 Class 3s will show that there is a substantial difference in the CPU utilization and in the responsiveness of when you use a temporary dynamic queue as opposed to a permanent queue. Use appropriate wait intervals with your MQ get to avoid an application of what we call a triggering loop. When you are designing your applications, think about, okay, what happens if I get a flood of messages in? Do I want to have an instance of a transaction running for each and every message that I get in? Or do I want to control that and have, you know, a few instances and have those reading and draining the queue? Again, the idea there is to take a look at, you know, avoiding some of the opens, closes, et cetera, that you may have. So with that, we will move on to foil number 24. Again, one of the common problems that we would like to talk about here is consider whether the messages need to be persistent. Persistent messages require logging. A lot of messages do need to be persistent. What I typically say on whether or not messages need to be persistent or non-persistent is if it's adding money to my bank account, I want it persistent. Taking money out, I want it to be non-persistent. But there are good business reasons for making messages persistent, and that this is something that you need to work with your business people on from an MQ administration perspective. One of the biggest horror stories that we have seen in a number of years was someone who went and turned off persistence on a number of queues, and nearly all their applications turned out was using persistence as queue defined, and then they had an outage. And everyone had been operating under the assumption that these messages were persistent, and they were not. So keep that in mind when you recommend that messages not be persistent. Keep your units of work small. 50 messages, generally speaking, is the highest recommendation. We do occasionally see some larger. Sometimes that works well, sometimes it doesn't. But one thing I would ask you to remember is that when you start, as your messages get physically larger, you might want to tune your unit of work down. We have seen some substantial performance improvements when people, you know, increase their message size by 5 or 10 times by just setting the number of messages within a unit of work lower. To see whether you have any depth in your queue and whether or not there are uncommitted puts or gets, you can issue the display queue status command as shown here. One performance issue that we hear about occasionally is slow reading from a queue, and there are still a number of times where we find that that slow reading is caused by an application building up a substantial depth on a queue before actually committing those messages. So if they're not committed, they're not available. The slow performance there has been caused actually by the pudding application. And please also make sure that you remember that the sync point is actually the default on both the get and the put on ZOS. That is not true on the distributed platforms. It's no sync point on the distributed platforms, so please keep that in mind. And with that, I am going to turn it over to Beverly. Joseph, if you would please change us to foil number 26.
Okay, next thing is some problems that we see reported a lot have to do with channels, and a lot of times slowness within that case. And one of the good things that you can do here is issue a display channel status command on both ends of the channel, assuming it's got two ends, or even just on the server if it's a client channel, and look for things like the status and the substate and the endout. Now, endout means that the channel is waiting for batch confirmation, and if you actually catch a channel in this state, it means there's been a delay either in that request for confirmation, either reaching the other side or being processed by the other side or coming back. The majority of the time we see a delay there, it's going to be in the network. Once in a while, it might be because of log problems on the other end, especially with distributed platforms, but that's just something to check there. The substate can give us some good information as well. For instance, if you have a substate of name server, that's going to indicate you have a DNS setup or availability problem. With the setup, that could be something like what to do in case of retries or timeouts, or sometimes we've seen a case where just the server itself has become unavailable, and then some of these lookups that we do can get backed up. Now, there is a service parameter that can cut down on the number of reverse DNS lookups, and that's something that you can do if you need to. Just be aware that that would affect whether channel names are going to appear in some error messages and things like that. And another situation with substate is if you look on both ends and you're seeing that both of those channels are in a receive state, that means both ends are waiting for something to come from the network. So, again, another hint that the problem isn't really in MQ or the channel itself. It's in the transport layer somewhere. So that would be the area you would need to focus on. And slide 27, please. Some other settings that you can think about are your batch size, and that has to do with the batch confirmation I was mentioning earlier, and the batch interval and NPM speed. That's non-persistent message speed. And if you go back to support pack in P16, there's a good write-up on all of those categories. Now, if you are having a network problem, you can review a packet or other network trace, such as a sniffer, to see if you might have delayed acknowledgments or some retransmits, or maybe your window size is getting closed. And I wanted to point out one TCP/IPA PAR for ZOS 111 and 112, where a new dynamic right-sizing feature was actually lowering the size, but then it wasn't ever going back up. So that APAR is PM16788. And then another hint that I was given was be careful about using shared ports for clients, because each use would require DB2 access to update a record. So think about that. If you have a client that's connecting and disconnecting quite frequently, that's going to be a lot of DB2 accesses. So just really think about that and be aware as you're designing that situation. And if we go on to slide 28, please. Here I wanted to point out the instance where APARs could actually be involved in the performance problem. We have a tech doc, number 700-6625, and it has links for each release, and it lists the currently available APARs. It has columns that will highlight ones that are hyper, meaning high impact or pervasive, or if there's an error with a fix or it's fixing an error. So you just would like to take a look at that and keep up with that and make sure you have fixes for known problems. And a couple that I wanted to point out right now, we're in sort of a state now where there were a couple of PE'd PTFs, but at the time they were put on, they weren't marked PE. And then the fixing APAR is not on yet in every case. So I just wanted to point out for version 701, it's PM32355. Or for version 6, it's PM33115. And this can have quite a few different symptoms, such as delays in MQ puts or MQ gets. It can even have a symptom of your buffer pools running out because of those delays with the MQ gets. And it can have CPU implications and so on. So just make sure you've got those fixes on. And then another area that we sometimes see some delays on has to do with if you're using clustering and there's a maintenance cycle. And just make sure you've got on this PM44820 to avoid any problems in that area. Now, there's another APAR from the distributed side, IZ86170, and that's included in 6-pack 7015. And what that has to do with is if you're using a Java or JMS client and the MQ-GET is using a wait interval, under the covers, that wait interval was actually being reset to zero. So if you have an MQ-GET that's part of a loop, instead of it waiting the 5 seconds you expected, it's coming back immediately, and then it's going back and reissuing the MQ-GET, and it was just beating its head against the wall. So that can certainly have performance implications on the queue manager with CPU and that sort of thing. So make sure you have that on. And now we'll go on to slide 29 and back to Lynn.
Well, now we're going to talk a little bit about some of the tools you have at your disposal to help you with some of these performance issues that we've talked about. And, of course, my favorite tool is the SMF data, the SMF-115 or the statistics records, and the SMF-116 or the accounting records. And I include in that the class 3s for the thread level and queue level data. The controlling factors in the SysP macro for the SMF stats and SMF counting, that will activate what we call the class 1 data. And you can get the same effect by entering the commands to start the traces. And now on the second command you see there, that will actually start the quite prolific SMF-116 class 3 records. But those can be really, really useful if you're trying to track down a performance problem and you need to see what's going on in your environment. So I would recommend getting, as I said, get familiar with those, especially when you are looking for trying to determine what's normal and what's not. With that, if we'll turn to FOIL 30 and Beverly.
Okay, some other tools would include RMF, and that can help you with the system resources that we talked about at the very beginning, looking at CPU and storage and I.O. and see if there is constraint or contention or anything like that. And RMF is a large category unto itself. You know, there are classes out there that would help you with learning how to use and interpret that. There are monitors, for instance, Tivoli and Megamon, that can help you keep an eye on things and can be really valuable in working with performance problems. We've talked about a few display commands, such as the queue status or the channel status, that can help you get a picture of what's going on in the system. And I have a link here to the command reference in the Information Center. Now, there may be some instances where dumps and traces will be needed. So we have a tech note, number 129-1192, that describes how to collect troubleshooting data for performance problems in key on ZOS. Now on to slide 31, please.
On slide 31, what we're talking about here is some more tools you might have at your disposal to help you evaluate your environment or check for issues and check and see how your performance is going. And the first of those is the performance harness for Java Message Service. We've seen a lot of uptake of this in the past couple of years. That's actually out on DeveloperWorks, and while several of these things are mentioned more in terms of testing some things out with Message Broker, we found them very useful for MQ as well. From a support pack perspective, we often recommend that people give a try to IP13, which is, again, it was written initially for the broker, but it has a couple of programs there that are extremely useful for driving some tests through MQ itself and seeing how it's performing without actually using an application code behind it. And, of course, there's always our all-time favorite for submitting messages into MQ. It's IH03 or what it's more popularly known as is RFHUtil and RFHUtilC, just to drive an individual message through the environment. We'll turn to foil number 32. Beverly will tell us about when you want to use defect support versus services.
Okay. So if you look at the software support handbook, I have a link there, and it does say that general performance analysis is going to be a situation that usually requires some sort of advanced support offering. That would be services. And services are going to have some of these tools that Lynn has been describing and have the experience of using and interpreting those, and they're really going to be your best resource. Yeah, some of the larger accounts we talk to do have in-house performance teams that have a lot of experience with these themselves, so they will actually have gone through that. But not everybody is large enough to have that sort of in-house support, so you can get services as you need it for that sort of just health check or overall performance. You just don't have any idea where to even start. So that's the sort of thing there. Now, you can engage these services through your marketing rep. Some of you may know who that is. And if you don't, there is a way that you can go to www.idm.com/planetwide. And for each country, there will be a list of contact phone numbers. And if you go through the general inquiries number, for instance, in the U.S., I happen to know that that's 1-800-IBM for you, and they can help you locate who your marketing rep is, and then the marketing rep in turn can set up that services engagement. Now, there will be situations where your analysis has revealed a suspected defect, or for instance, what changed was you put on maintenance and now the problem has started. And so you can open a service request to level 2 defect support. And we would also be engaged if there's a need of a specific situation, analyzing, say, a trace or a dump, getting down into that level. We don't tend to just take on a whole boatload of dock and just go out looking to see what we can see. It's more focused than that. But at least, you know, this way there's somebody in IBM that can help you one way or the other depending on what your situation is and what your needs are. Now on to slide 33, please.
Okay, some additional references for you. We have the WebSphere MQ Information Center. The topic dealing with performance problems can help out. There is, of course, the WebSphere MQ support portal, and our favorites are the support packs MP16, also known as the Bible, Capacity Planning and Tuning for WMQ on ZOS. MP1B, which has talking about interpreting accounting and statistics data. MP1G is the current performance report for MQ version 701 on ZLS, and we will look forward to the performance report that should be coming out in the not-too-far-distant future for version 7.1, which on ZLS is going to go live in 10 days. So we have there's a lot of information out there. If you're not yet on 7.01 and still on version 6, the performance report is still out there for you. And I'll turn it back over to Beverly.
Okay, slide 34, please. A couple of other references. Lynn in her modesty isn't talking about her own presentation here, something that she prepared for share, but it talks about SMF 115s and 116s and reading those records and interpreting them. So that will be a really good example for you in going through those MQ-SMF records. And just wanted to point out also an earlier webcast that we had this year was Great Expectations, working with the MQ ZLS Level 2 support team. So that's another good resource for you on some problems. And then I will let Lynn talk about the upcoming workshop on slide 35.
Yes, we have been planning, and we are now in development of an ATS-hosted, what we call a wildfire workshop called WMQPD, or WMQ for ZOS Problem Determination and Performance. We hope to start delivery in February 2012. We're finding the number of sessions we're getting asked for WMQ 7.1 may interfere with that delivery date a little bit, but hopefully not too much. But your IBM representative, and Beverly told you earlier, if you don't know who they are, how to find out who they are, can request a session to come to an IBM tech or an IBM office near you. Please note that these workshops are all free, and they include both lecture and lab, so you will have the opportunity to get your hands dirty with some of this SMF data that we know and love so well. Turn it back over to Beverly for our summary.
Okay, so in summary, we have gone through some of the common causes we've seen of performance problems, or if those don't address it, or if you need some help in identifying whether those might be the cause, some of the resources, the tools, and the references to use. And just want to point out that some of the common problems might be identified quickly. Do understand, some other of these problems may take a good bit of time and documentation gathering to pin down. These can be some tough problems to work on, but I'm just hoping that in going through this, we have helped you to prevent some of the common pitfalls that we've seen so you can avoid these problems or can help you solve some of these problems more quickly. And I'd just like to thank Lynn so much for her expertise and perspective on this, and I'll hand control back to Joseph now.
Thank you, Beverly and Lynn, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We have no questions on the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. I see a couple of questions here in the group chat, so I am going to announce these questions verbally. The first question here we have is coming from Rama Ralph, and the question is, what is virtual storage configuration?
Okay, this is Beverly. That comes back to one of the earlier slides. And that is referring more to at the operating system level where the IES, USI, that sort of thing, where the system is configured as to how much virtual storage is available for private. And that's what I was referring to there.
Thank you, Beverly. And I think we have one more question here from Terry. And the question is, how do you solve the fact of SMF 116 records being threefold bigger in version 7 than in version 6?
Well, unfortunately, right now we can't solve that problem. That is something that changes were put in version 7 to provide additional and more detailed information, and so those records got bigger. If you would please put in a requirement to look at the SMF data gathering and to adjust the size of those records, this is something that we've had some discussions with the lab about from time to time, about perhaps making the selection of information more granular than it is right now, and that can help reduce the problem. You know, one of the issues is how much is too much and how much is not enough. And there's a fine line that can be drawn there. But please do drop us a note about this and submit a requirement on this particular topic, because I think it's important to a lot of people. And then when you know, because of the size of the records, a lot of people don't cut them regularly. So when they do get into a situation where they need them, again, you don't know what normal looks like because you don't cut them regularly, and you might spend some time chasing some things that are not really problems and not chase the chain that is the real problem and is the real heart of the matter. So it is unfortunate, but it's a fact right now.
Thank you, Lynn. And it looks like we don't have any other questions coming through the web conference right now. So at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.